hello and thanks for joining us on a WTTW News special, Firsthand Peacekeepers. I'm Brandis Friedman, and tonight we hear from community members and stakeholders working to prevent and interrupt violence in Chicago's neighborhoods.
I'm trying to heal my community, relieve them from the trauma that we experienced.
Firsthand accounts from Chicago residents working to keep their communities safe. This as Chicago's violence prevention programs are facing an uncertain future as funding dries up.
We can't just lock people up and throw away the key and forget they're there.
And we explore what policies are in place to address the root causes of violence and its impact on communities. We'll kick things off right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
First off tonight, Chicago's violence prevention programs are facing an uncertain future. That's because Chicago's federal COVID-19 relief funds that helped pay for these programs are set to run out. And with city and state officials grappling with multi-billion dollar deficits and little hope of help coming from Washington, questions remain over what happens next for these programs. Our Heather Chiron joins us now with a deep dive into this uncertain moment for violence prevention efforts. Heather, so let's start with the basics. What exactly do we mean when we talk about violence prevention and community violence intervention?
Well, it is the theory that it is better to stop a crime or an incident of violence before it occurs, rather than sending an officer after it happens to sort of enforce the law, make an arrest, or provide emergency aid. This seeks to address what some people call the root causes of crime, abuse, trauma, poverty, by dealing with those issues before people get involved in a life of crime.
Do they work to stop crime and violence?
So the initial studies of these programs, which have long been sort of funded in Chicago by business and philanthropic groups, say yes, they do. But the issue is that they have not been expanded citywide or to scale. And until that happens and these programs have a permanent place in the city and the state's budget, it will not pay dividends to reduce Chicago's crime rate, which of course remains higher than other big cities like New York and Los Angeles.
So back in 2021, then Mayor Lori Lightfoot announced plans to use $136 million in federal COVID-19 aid funds to fund violence prevention efforts. Were those promises fulfilled?
No. We've reported a lot about the problems that the city has had in getting those federal COVID relief funds out of the door. By the time she had left office, those pledges had been reduced by nearly 40%. And in fact, the city has only spent $44 million of the nearly $2 billion in federal COVID-19 relief on violence prevention programs. Now, the city has another $31 million budgeted for these programs that they can spend through the end of 2026. But after that, there's no clear source of funding, state, federal, local, for these programs.
In that case, what happens next?
Well, it is a moment of great uncertainty for groups like Chicago CRED, who are out there doing this work and say if they can only get a substantial amount of money, they can show that this is really the way to address crime and violence, rather than hiring more police officers, which seems almost impossible at this moment. But it's not clear that the city is going to dedicate the necessary resources.
Meanwhile, of course, the folks on the ground who are doing that work, they have their work cut out for them. Heather Chiron, thank you for your reporting.
Thanks, Brandis.
And you can read Heather's full story as well as watch documentaries on local residents working to create peace in Chicago's neighborhoods. It's all at WTTW.com/firsthand. We're back with more right after this. Violent crimes in Chicago declined between 2023 and 2024, and peacekeepers across the city play an important role in interrupting and preventing violent crime in neighborhoods. These violence prevention leaders are actively strategizing and organizing in their communities every day to improve safety and make a difference.
Each one of us want to see the community better. These are men and women who live in the community. So I use that as a rally point, right? Hey, you want to see your community become better? Help me in this fight.
And here to talk about their work are Damian Morris, Chief Program Officer of Violence Prevention at Breakthrough, and Adrian Rodriguez, Co-Director of Violence Prevention at the Puerto Rican Cultural Center. Thanks to you both for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
So let's take a look, or actually I want to start with you, Damian, sorry. So Garfield Park experiences some of the most violence in the city. Why is this neighborhood such a hot spot?
Yes, yeah, so for a number of reasons, a third of our shooting, whether they are fatal or non-fatal, they actually come from other neighborhoods. And so by us building a relationship with our partners, right, we're able to cross-collaborate, also step in and assist each other with mediations, right? And so East Garfield Park is a neighborhood that we see a large group of gatherings in those neighborhoods. And so it increases with the violence as well.
Do you think people within the community have become desensitized to violence?
For sure that. And then right now we're working on changing that, right? It has became the norm. And so by me doing the work along with my partners as well, we're trying to change that and bring back peace.
Adrian, in your documentary, we see you making efforts to connect with the youth, especially with middle schoolers. Why is it important to reach young people before they get to high school?
Yeah, most kids are trying to find themselves. I see a difference in an eighth grader to a sophomore in high school, and then a difference from a sophomore in high school to someone who's out of high school. Within a summer, I've also seen kids, you know, change from being a good kid who doesn't know what they want to do to engaging in street activity. So we just want to engage these youth with as many opportunities as they can, give them different experiences in the community with programming, with mentorship, just providing them different life experiences while they, you know, grow into that teenage years.
So let's take a look. There's a scene where you and your team, you're working outside Clemente High School. Here that is.
Oh, they fighting right here. Yo, 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 yo. Come on.
So this can also be dangerous work for you all as well. Adrian, how often are you intervening in moments like this?
At the school, we support all the local schools, so that includes Orr High School, North Grand High School, Roberto Clemente. On Division Street, there's three high schools. That's two alternative high schools, Pathways, and Pedro Albizu Campo High School. So that corridor from Division in Western to Division in California sees so many different age groups, demographics. So we like to support that. Because we deal with it a lot. We have relationships with the principals. We have relationships with security guards. So if there's a fight in the school, they're already messaging us to be prepared, you know, for retaliation after school, whether that's parents involved, friends involved. We're communicating so that we can make sure we get ahead of the crime.
And also, you know, you're the one getting in there, breaking up a physical fight with young people. Tell me a little bit about, like, sort of the risks that you and folks who do this work are taking.
Yeah, I've put guns down. I've stopped kids from hitting kids with other weapons. Even security is reluctant to jump in sometimes because of, you know, the red tape with the CPS. What we want to do is just make sure that we're there to prevent anything, you know, harmful happening at that time. So it's dangerous. We were on this while shooting this documentary, was on a scene to a hot spot, and there were shots that were fired. So as an outreach worker, it is a very dangerous job. We're there before the police most of the time, probably 95% of the time, and we never know what can happen, you know, before that.
So research from the University of Chicago Crime Lab, it shows a 7.3% reduction in violence between 2023 and 2024. Violent crimes decreasing by 6.7% and non-fatal shootings decreasing by 3.7%. Damian, do you think this is sustainable and or are these declines, are they different from in previous years?
They're very different because we're actually focusing on intervention. That is very key, right? We literally put our life on the line to save others. And so I think that's very important. But we also need some security as well in doing this here, right? So we need job security. We need consistency as well because the relationships that we're building, they stem from when I was a case manager and now I'm the chief program officer. So I've been involved with them for years, right? And so we need that consistent funding to continue that momentum that we've gained.
So, and as we mentioned earlier, federal COVID-19 funds aimed at reducing violence in the city are expected to be discontinued next year. What are your concerns there, Damian?
My concerns is that there's a shortage that we'll have to do a reduction in certain areas that we need, right? The jobs still have to get done. So we may have to cut some victim advocates, some street outreach, some case managers. But then we're asking them to do more, right? To go above and beyond for those who are still with us, right? So I'm concerned about that.
Adrian, in your documentary, we see you visit what was once a homeless encampment in Humboldt Park, where there's sort of a personal moment for you there as well. But how does homelessness contribute to violence in the community?
Yeah, I talk about it all the time. When we're doing case management for youth, a part of our intake form is finding out if they have access to a stable home, employment, all of the wraparound services. When a youth doesn't have a safe space to go and lay their head at night, that just leads them to so many other, chances to get in trouble. Now you're engaging with people that you may not have engaged with because you're forced to be outside, you're couch hopping. So it just leads to a life that they don't want to be a part of because they always want, they want a secure bed on, underneath
right,
themselves.
Secure roof,
so, yeah,
security.
Secure roof. So, it's a cause of the violence.
Damian, part of your work also involves creating community peace circles. What are those and why are they important?
Yes, so they're very important because we went away from knowing who were on the block, right? We went from that where we used to govern ourselves. And so the peace circles really bring that back, right? Understanding who you have residing next door or across the street from you. But then also the peace circle is designed to know more about the individual in that circle, and then the chances of you actually want to see harm done to that person is less likely.
A couple seconds left. Adrian, I'm going to give you the last word on this. How does this work impact your own mental health?
You try not to take it home, but it's hard to when you're attending a funeral, when you're helping people set up, for a wake. It's hard, but we wake up every day knowing that our job goes past, it goes above and beyond for what we do. I really believe in the work we do. I believe it's essential. We talk about that at the Puerto Rican Culture Center, not just offering wraparound services or services, but essential services.
A labor of love.
Absolutely.
Is what it sounds like. Okay. We'll have to leave it there because if folks want to know more, they've got to go watch your documentary.
Yes, yes.
Damian Morris, Adrian Rodriguez, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And to hear more about the work Chicagoans are doing to create peace in their communities, you can check out our website. It is all at WTTW.com/firsthand. And up next, we explore the policies in place to address the root causes of violence. We'll be right back. In the struggle to make neighborhoods safer, some law enforcement agencies and court officials are working to find innovative approaches. For some, that means partnering with community organizations and peacekeepers working on the ground. And officials are pushing for policies to address root causes of violence and help offenders repair their relationships with their communities. Joining us to discuss these efforts are Patricia Spratt, a judge of the Cook County Circuit Court, Catherine Bocanegra, a professor at the University of Illinois Chicago, whose work focuses on violence prevention, community mental health, and criminal justice reform, and Ernest Cato, chief public safety officer at the Illinois Department of Corrections and former deputy chief commander of the Chicago Police Department. Everyone, welcome and thank you for joining us. So, Judge Spratt, you oversee a restorative justice community court for young people with nonviolent misdemeanors or felonies. And here's a bit of your firsthand documentary where you talk about that.
It's not like the criminal court where you don't have an opportunity to tell your story until you're being sentenced. You have the
restorative justice courts return offenders back to the community as fully participating, productive members of the community.
Judge, how is what you do and also what this court does also a part of peacekeeping?
Restorative justice is peacekeeping. It is repairing the harm. Repairing the harm to the community, repairing the harm to a victim, and repairing the harm to the offender, him or herself. And it is, we use peacekeeping, we use the circles process to bring the people back to their...
Bring the people together.
They form a relationship, and within that relationship, they come to agreements of how to repair the harm, and they change the life of the person who's coming through it.
And also prevents them, hopefully, from being incarcerated.
That, and we have a wonderful low recidivist rate. I said early in one of those films, I said 16% is 13% recidivist rate for the restorative justice court 13%. Participants.
Okay, and we're going to come back to that in a little bit. Catherine, I want to get you in here because you also gave a speech as part of the Firsthand Talks series about the toll that nonviolence work takes on peacekeepers. We just heard a little bit from Adrian in the last panel about that, but here's a bit of your talk.
They attend dozens of funerals a year, often of their own program participants, but even of their own family members or coworkers. They are regularly, if not daily, exposed to gun violence and homicide scenes, and they place their own personal safety at risk as they seek to intervene in these situations.
Catherine, what's the impact of what you just described and the toll that takes on the peacekeepers?
The relentless cycle of re-traumatization that community violence intervention workers confront has a deep toll on their professional effectiveness, on their personal well-being, on their family well-being. And if it goes untreated and their work goes unsupported, it has ripple effects in the community.
Even in your talk, you reference a worker who wasn't taking care of himself, nobody was taking care of him, and he ends up going back to prison.
Yes, absolutely. I believe that healing is an essential ingredient for peacemaking. Unresolved trauma perpetuates cycles of violence, and unresolved trauma in our peacekeepers means that they can't be as effective as they can be in communities and preventing shootings and violence and creating stability and peace.
Mm-hmm. Chief Cato, you give a firsthand talk speech about the importance of visibility in communities in order to reduce violence. What do you mean by that, and what does that look like?
Well, presence is very important. And when we talk about visibility, it's not just about occupation. It's about being a part of the community. And in being a part of the community, you have relationships that are necessary. Those relationships will turn into information that's needed to ensure that that community stays safe as possible.
Judge Spratt, we know that the recidivism rate, as you said, for people who graduate from your court is 13% within 1 year of enrollment versus 65% for those who are adjudicated through the traditional court system. How does this program reduce recidivism? How does the work that you do mean that folks are not committing another crime and going back to prison?
The work that the young people do in the circle process with the circle keepers and others who are sitting in circle with them forms relationships and forms trust. We tell them when they come into the court that whatever they say in a restorative process is privileged, so nothing they say can leak out and come back and hurt them. So that fosters a feeling of safety and trust to within the circle, come to some agreement with the people in the community of what they need to do to repair the harm and to advance their own goals in coming out of the court successfully.
And they also complete some steps, right? There's sort of a plan for them to repair this harm.
That's the repair of harm agreement.
Okay, the repair of harm agreement. Thank you. That's the word I was looking for. But what are the circumstances for those 13%, for those who do end up recidivating? What are the circumstances that leads to that? Under what circumstances does someone unfortunately fail?
They don't come out of the community. They stick with the group that they've been hanging out with before they were arrested. We don't get to talk to those people, though, because they're back in jail. So we just can't find out why they went back to committing crimes.
But you know that they stopped showing up. It sounds like you probably end up losing communication with them, and they're not working the program, basically.
Well, once they've graduated from the program, we generally don't hear back from them. Mostly because they're working hard, or they're in school, or they're doing other things that they, for their own betterment and for the betterment of the community.
It's probably good. They're living their lives.
That's right.
They don't need to hear from
you.
You don't need to hear from them. Catherine, what does support look like for violence intervention workers? You know, we just heard Damian mention, you know, a little bit of job security. Their jobs are not typical in that they can get a contract. You know, everybody else, we want better pay and better benefits and better hours. But what does it look like for these folks?
Absolutely. A livable wage, a robust benefits package, job security, not going grant to grant or worrying that government funding could be cut short. But in addition to that, there are wellness strategies that can be implemented by their employers, by the organizations they're working for, that value rest and recovery, that value decompressing after a critical incident in the community, and that also give them space to breathe and take vacation and invest in their own professional development. All of those strategies communicate something really important to our frontline peacekeepers, which is that your value extends beyond what you produce and your past. Your value is in your leadership and in your well-being.
Chief Cato, what is your advice to community members who fear sort of letting the gangs or the drug dealers in their community, fear letting them know that I see you and I see what you're doing? Because that's something that you talk about in your talk as well.
Well, you have to be visible. You can't be invisible. You have to take that chance and just walk up and down your block, sit on your porch, engage with each other. Because if you treat it as though it's invisible, that's what you're going to get. We have to do a better job with supporting the folks in each community. And I think once we start doing that, you will see a difference.
Then there's the reverse of that, because some community members may not trust the police department either. And what role the command in that neighborhood, what role do they play in helping rebuild that trust?
They have to be a part of the community. They literally have to be a part of the community. They have to do foot patrols. They have to get to know the members in that community. And I think policing itself are doing a better job at that by engaging with the members in that community. Often folks in communities feel left out. They feel alone. Policing and community policing coming together as one will support that and would help that. Without that, you're going to continue to have what we've had in the past. So it's very important that the community no longer be afraid, and it's important that policing supports the community, and it should be one strategy with the community.
Few seconds left, under a minute. Cook County State's Attorney Judge Spratt is soon going to stop diverting nonviolent gun cases to restorative justice courts. How is that going to impact the people who would typically come to your court?
It already has. She's paused. She calls it putting a pause on sending over the gun possession offenders, because she's working through the legislature to create a new program for those who are arrested for gun possession and don't have FOID cards. And this new program will get them the training, according to her, the training and getting their documentation. But she's not sending them back to us once that happens. She envisions a court procedure where there's no peace circles. So if there's no peace circles, it's not restorative justice.
Okay.
It won't be coming back to us.
Okay. We'd love to talk about that more, but we're going to focus on peacekeepers tonight. We'll talk to you about that again some other time. Judge Spratt, thank you so much for joining us. Catherine Bocanega and Chief Ernest Cato, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And for more on firsthand peacekeepers, be sure to check out our website. We explore these issues as well as other areas like social media's use to end gun violence and how other cities are working to tackle crime. Again, that's all at WTTW.com/firsthand. And that is our show for this Monday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Now for all of us here at WTTW News, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to be a multilingual law firm that provides translators for a variety of languages.